Hello and welcome to this Canadian Opera Company podcast sponsored by DECA, the opera label. My name is Jana Wichelow, and today I'm speaking with a much-loved figure from the world of opera and one who means so much to us here at the COC, Lotfi Mansouri. Thank you so much for joining me today, Lotfi.
Delighted that you have me.
Now, there's a lot we could talk about here today. Lotfi's life in opera has taken him all over the world as a director, a general director, and a superb raconteur. And if our listeners would like a delicious read into what makes a career such as his, I'd encourage them to pick up Lotfi's autobiography called An Operatic Journey. In fact, it's available at the Canadian Opera Company's Opera Shop, open during performances at the Four Seasons Centre for the Performing Arts. And we're giving away a signed copy, so go to our blog, Parlando, which you'll find at our website, coc.ca, and leave a comment in the post about this podcast. We'll draw names from a hat for a winner. Lotfi, you started as an opera singer before becoming a director. And in there, you also studied and taught psychology at UCLA. Is there some connection there, some preparation for the
role? Oh, a great deal. Oh, my God. For a stage director, it helps a lot. Or also as a general director, working with patrons and boards and all that. Psychology is a very good tool. So
what made you move from being the opera singer, studying the psychology, and then making the shift into opera permanently?
Well, actually, I started in opera. You know, I fell in love with opera very early on because actually my father, of course, I was born in Tehran, Iran, and music was not respected at that time in Iran. And if you wanted to call somebody a dirty name, you would call him a musician or a dancer.
Wow.
You know, so my father did not allow me to do that, and he had decided that I should become a doctor. So I started as a pre-med student at UCLA and all that. And then I had heard, because it's very funny, because my influences were all from the American movies. Because when I was young in Tehran, Iran, then I would see, I think, Diana Durbin, of course, I fell in love with her. She was
Didn't
wonderful.
Did you sort of sneak out to the movies as well?
I used to sneak in.
Sneak in, yeah.
And then sneak out. And so I heard my first Umbeli, my beloved Diana sang it in her movie of First Love, where she got her first kiss. And actually, I always thought it was in English, because in that film, she sang it in English. Right. As a matter of fact, Diana even taught me, you know, another aria, the first time I heard it was through Diana in a film, Nessun Dorma. I always thought it was a soprano aria until I worked it with Pavarotti. I said, no, this is tenor aria. So I had already had an introduction from the Hollywood films to, you know, with Diana Durbin, Jeanette MacDonald, you know, all these people. So when I came at UCLA and I was a pre-med, I just wasn't interested in the pre-medical studies. You know, I'll jokingly say I took chemistry 1A four times. You know, so, and then I started going to performances. And as a matter of fact, then I had so much heavy courses for pre-med that I was very slow, because also English was new for me. So I had to always study with a dictionary, and we took hours. So my foreign student advisor suggested that I should take a class that had no homework. I said, are you serious? There is a class that has no homework? He said, yeah, you can sing in a chorus. I said, but I've never sang in my life. So anyway, to cut a long story short, so she said, well, the first semester you take a voice class and you get 2 units, and then the second semester take the chorus and you get another 2 units and you have no homework. Wow. So I took a voice class, and the first day of the class, my teacher sat at the piano and he went up the scale. And I kept going up with him, and just, you know. And then finally he stopped and said, that was a high C. And of course, I didn't know what the heck he was talking about at that time. So I started, you know, as a singer. And then I did, you know, I did choruses, I sang at church and all that kind of stuff. That's how I started doing that. So it was first through performing.
Yes.
You know, and I had a wonderful partner, that's Carol Burnett. We used to do a lot of gigs for ladies' clubs.
That's wonderful.
And each of us used to get $5 and some cream chicken. So that's how I thought. I got started looking at the opera performances. San Francisco Opera in those days used to come to the L.A. after their season in San Francisco. I supered them. I carried a spear, and in those days, a super got $1. So I would go down, and I would, and incredible artists. I mean, Tabaldi, you know, and Giuseppe Di Stefano, Vito Sayao, Mario Del Monaco. It was just incredible. So that was my introduction. And I just, more and more, I fell in love with it. And that's how really opera overtook my life.
That's fantastic. Yeah. After 1960, you became a full-time director.
Yes. Actually, I started directing at UCLA. Believe it or not, I think jokingly, I said, since they couldn't get rid of me, they made me an associate professor. So for 3 years, I was an associate professor in the music department, where I was in charge of staging and working with the artists on their arias and all that kind of stuff. So that was the very first time. And the very first opera I ever directed completely, and I actually got paid for it, was in Los Angeles City College. And the opera was Così fan tutte. And I was such an idiot at that time. I thought, hey, that's an easy opera. Now if you say Così, I start shaking. It's so difficult, you know. So that's how I became very active in California. I was directing for UCLA, from the City College, and for the Marymount College. So that's how I really started building my repertoire. Until 1960, then I got my first contract at the Zurich Opera House as a resident stage director.
Yeah. Now, by 1976, you joined the Canadian Opera Company,
right,
which you headed as general director for the next 12 years.
Actually, it was 13 years.
Oh, okay, so until 89.
Yes.
Okay. Now, these were very exciting times for the company, and I'm stunned at some of the developments that came to fruition in this time. We had the expansion of the company season, the development of surtitles, and for those of our listeners who may not know, surtitles work like subtitles in foreign movies. They're translations of what is being sung on stage, projected above the stage,
yeah.
And the COC was the first company to actually
exactly.
do that.
Yeah.
We had the building of the administrative offices where we're sitting right now in warm-up room number one, and you can hear someone singing
Same.
In warm-up room number
yes.
two. Nice ambient sound. And you brought Joan Sutherland to Toronto. Can you tell us about
yes,
that?
Yes, of course. And also we formed a COC orchestra
yes.
because until then, Toronto Symphony used to play. And so and they were being very arrogant. So, and Walter, I don't know if you remember Walter Homburger, who was running the Toronto Symphony. He and I love to kind of have a little bit of a
head busting,
yeah. And finally I decided, and they were really charging us, like, for example, for the entire orchestra, even if we were doing Mozart, but we had to pay for everybody. And then I discovered that actually we could have our own orchestra with the 50% of the budget of what we were giving the Toronto Symphony. So we then developed the COC, which they're doing now beautifully.
It's a really,
it's
really
a wonderful orchestra. Yeah, so that's how that we started it,
yeah.
You know, at that time. It was a wonderful time in Toronto because it was a good time for me as a general director because the city was growing because of the situation in Montreal and the separatists and all that. All of a sudden, the city of Toronto started to expand and it was exploding.
Mm-hmm.
And for me and for my team, it was a wonderful time to be here because we were like Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland. We thought everything possible. Let's do put it on in the back lot and let's do it in the, you know, garden, whatever. And we did. We had no, I mean, you know, we were fearless.
Yeah. And you spent a lot of your energy, I believe, in getting people to come here as well.
Well, yes, because of the, I was desperately trying to build a reputation of the company. So, and since I had a wonderful relationship with Sutherland and we had done a lot of productions together, so I was very lucky because also we did all sorts of tricks, my dear, to build our subscription. Like when I brought Joan here for the first time for Norma, you couldn't get a subscription unless you bought the whole thing. You wouldn't get Norma. You see, so we played every trick we could do. And then we built, at that time we had over 20,000 subscribers. And so I loved Joan. I mean, she was one of the highlights of my life, of professional life and personal life.
Mm-hmm.
a gracious, wonderful lady. And she did quite a bit. She did Norma for us. She did her first Anna Bolena of Donizetti with a great cast, Judy Forrest, James Morris, Ben Heppner, you know, Janet Stubbs, and on and on and on. And then she did Adrienne Lecouvreur of Chilea. And then she did her one and only Ophelia, because she had recorded it with her husband, and I convinced her to do it on the stage. And I was very lucky. It was the only time she ever did Ophelia, and I was very honored.
That's
and
a real coup.
Oh, it was wonderful. And she was, for me, she was fantastic.
Well, we're going to listen to a recording of her, Joan Sutherland, singing The Mad Scene from Hamlet by Thomas. And this is a recording from 1960 on the London label. Francesco Molinari Pradelli conducts the orchestra of the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. Thank you.